I would take Mackenzie Gore 1-1 in a baseball draft. If it were me, I could have any player in this draft. I would take Mackenzie Gore. Now, I'll qualify that by saying I don't have to pay him millions of dollars. I'm not going to lose my job if I blow a series of first-round picks. And I could see if you wanted more certainty, and still pretty good ceiling, taking Kyle Wright over him. But for me, I'd take Mackenzie Gore.
Episode 89 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayre. Good evening, Brett. On a scale from 1 to Jeter Downs, how confident are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling pretty close to Jeter Downs. I think we're gonna have a good show. I'm feeling good.
I'm feeling good too. And for the audience at home, I should point out that is number one overall pick in the 2017 MLB draft class names draft. Jeter Downs. He's our new Dansby Swanson. So congratulations to Mr. Downs. So we have a pretty exciting show for you tonight, primarily because Craig isn't here. But also because Jim Callis is going to be joining us shortly. Jim Callis, of course, senior writer for MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com. Hard to find anybody who knows more about prospects and specifically more about the upcoming draft class than Mr. Callis. So we're going to get to him in just a few minutes. But before that, Brett and I thought we would just touch on some current events, since it's been 2 weeks since we recorded. And while nothing super crazy has happened in the baseball world, definitely a few interesting guys from Dynasty League perspective. So, Brett, let's start with some call-ups. And we have sort of three fairly big-name guys, three guys who were top 101 people on our lists before the season, as well as two guys who are sort of on the fringe. And let's start with the non-pitcher, and let's start with Brett Phillips, who was called up by the Brewers a few days ago. How are you feeling about this Phillips call up?
Yeah, I mean it's I guess fun for it was fun for two games exactly. Long term there's still a lot to get excited about in terms of what Phillips can bring to the table. I mean, obviously all of this is kind of dependent on how playing time shakes out, because as we were discussing before the show started, the Brewers have a lot of outfielders.
Yes.
They're going to be getting Ryan Braun back. They have Domingo Santana. They have Keon Broxton. They have Lewis Brinson in AAA. They have Eric Thames, who's playing left field now, although he'll go back to first base likely when Ryan Braun comes back. They've got some depth. Phillips is having a really good year. He's hitting for pretty good power. It's in Colorado Springs, so you gotta kind of take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but he's hitting 297 with 11 homers in less than 200 plate appearances. He's not running in AAA. He ran a little bit last year and just wasn't very good at it. And that's kind of been the story of his minor league career. You know, he's got 66 stolen bases against 40 caught stealings throughout his minor league career. That's not good. It's not something that even on the Brewers is going to engender him too many green lights. So, whereas I think maybe 2-3 years ago, there was the hope that he would sort of blossom into someone who could be maybe a 2020 guy. I think we're realistically looking at a player that is probably going to top out at around 10 steals. That said, you know, calling Milwaukee home, I think, 20 to 25 home runs at some point is in play. And the batting average won't be great because he'll always have swing and miss issues. But he should not be a guy who's going to hurt you in that category. Ben, am I saying anything egregiously wrong?
No, not at all. I sort of wanted to bring him up as a segue to talk about Brinson because, you know, like you said, obviously this was not a long-term fix. They only had Phillips up for two games, but a little surprised that it wasn't Brinson, considering he's been the better overall hitter at AAA this season, is the better major league defender. Brinson is showing a great approach. He's only striking out 22% of the time right now, and he's walking 11% of the time, which is good because strikeouts have been more of a concern for him in the past. So, no real conclusion to draw from that, but I guess worth pointing out that both Brinson and Phillips are having very strong campaigns in AAA so far.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the thing where, you know, Brinson is the better prospect, and I think he's more likely to be the a bigger piece to Milwaukee down the line. And, you know, while they needed to bring someone up, I don't think they wanted to just call Brinson up for, you know, 2 or 3 days. I think it's easier just to call Phillips up for 2 or 3 days and send him back down. I think once Brinson gets the call, I don't think he's going back to Colorado Springs. So they're going to have to figure out their outfield situation to make room for him. But I would be hard pressed to imagine a situation where we don't see him this year and at least some sort of semi-regular role for Milwaukee.
I mean, we've thought this for a year or two now, but you got to figure they're going to try to move Ryan Braun, right?
Yeah, I assume they're probably still going to try to move Ryan Braun. But, you know, the other thing is that it's not like those other... They have a lot of depth, but they don't have anyone who's running away with any of those other jobs.
Right.
Keon Broxton's been fine so far, but I'm pretty sure he's 0 for his last like 20 or something, and he's still striking out 40% of the time, which is crazy. Domingo Santana still strikes out a ton as well, and he's always
having a good year though. I mean, he's basically having Brett Phillips' year, but in the majors.
Yeah, no, that's very true. But none of these guys are really going to be sort of game changers. And honestly, both Phillips and if Broxton doesn't work out, both Phillips and Brinson are much more qualified to play center field than anyone else the Brewers have on their major league roster. So there are a couple of paths for them to get time. I just, you know, it depends how healthy Ryan Braun is, and depends when they want to bring these guys up. I mean, you would have to think that if it were a month later and Super 2 were not a concern at all, that Brinson might be up while Braun is hurt, and they would they'd still be playing games at first regularly. But
right,
yeah, we'll see how it shakes out.
Okay, so I'm going to move us on to one of my favorite prospects on the face of planet Earth, Francis Martes, who, you know, as a lover of velocity and curveballs, Martes is right up my alley. And he was called up by the Brewers just today, yesterday? Yeah, or today when you're listening to this podcast, probably yesterday or 2 days ago. So interesting year for him at AAA so far. Missed a ton of bats, but the walk rate was particularly egregious. I mean, he's never been a command artist, but he's walking 17% of the batters he's faced so far this year. So I don't know how much there is to gain from you know what we'll see from Martes right now, but sort of talk about where you have Martes as a overall dynasty prospect right now, Brett.
I think it's pretty easy to make an argument that Martes is a top five dynasty pitching prospect arm. Mm-hmm. He's probably towards the back end of that. I'd say he's probably either four or five. But yeah, he is struggling a lot in AAA. And while it's not concerning long term, I mean, he's 21 years old. He's not going to be 22 until well after the season is over. But the walks certainly are concerning. I mean, he has 28 walks so far this year. He had 28 walks during his entire breakout 2015 campaign. So yeah, he's going to have to get that under control. I don't really understand this from the Astros standpoint, just because it sounds like they're going to use him in the bullpen, which is, you know, probably a smart move in the short term, considering his struggles in AAA. But if there's one thing the Astros have a lot of, and there's a lot of things they have a lot of, they're a really good team, but they have a lot of right-handed bullpen arms that are really good. They have, they've got obviously Giles and Harris, and they've got Michael Feliz, they've got Chris Devensky, they've got James Hoyt. It's a big group of good right-handed relievers. So I don't quite know where he's going to fit in here. He might kind of be used as sort of a mop-up guy at the beginning, sort of Earl Weaver style. But I don't think we should expect much value from him in 2017. I'm not sure whether he cracks a rotation, even if he does really well in the bullpen. I mean, there are a lot of guys ahead of him. But Ben, if you had to take the over under on 2.5 starts in the majors for Marte's this year, would you take the over or under?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's really good. I mean, I want to take the over just because he's a guy I feel like they could let air it out in the second half, but at the same time, they, like you alluded to earlier, I feel like they're more likely to use him in the bullpen. So I guess I'll go under, but 2.5 was a very tough number for me to hedge against.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And how many, just, I know you like Marte's a lot. How many pitching prospects currently in the minors would you take over Marte's right now in a dynasty league?
Hold on, let me just like very quickly pull up a list here. So I have.
I will let you count Alex Reyes.
Because right.
He's going to be a prospect at the, because he's going to be a pro, he's going to be on all our dynasty prospect list at the end of the year, because he's not going to pitch this year.
Yeah, that's true. But like for me, that's not a no. That's not a no doubt proposition for me.
I'm just saying to include him.
Right.
In the calculation.
I don't know. I'm looking at this list and I'm not well acquainted with every minor league starter's performance so far. I think what you said, back at the top five, if you told me he was a number three or four fantasy starting pitching prospect right now, I'd be all for that. I think I was, I was pretty high on Marte's coming into the year, and yeah, the walks aren't great, but you know, in 40 innings, that's not really enough to scare me off of him. So I still see him as someone who has, MLB number two fantasy, low end number two, high end number three upside.
Yeah. I think you could make an argument that he's the best fantasy pitching prospect in baseball. If you were concerned about Alex Reyes coming back, I mean, who's number two? Kopech?
You could argue Kopech.
I'd take Marte's over Kopech right now.
I think I would too, but they're in the same tier for me, I would say.
Honeywell, maybe?
No, I would take Marte's over Honeywell.
Yeah, I think I would too. It kind of depends what you think about Giolito.
Espinosa
is hurt.
Giolito is the one I was getting stuck on. I know he's not killing it in AAA, and I know the reports, for the last little while haven't been super promising. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there is an argument that he is literally the best fantasy starting pitching prospect. But, you know, for me, Giolito, Marte's, Alex Reyes, Kopech, all a little bit in the same tier.
Yeah, no, that's very fair.
Okay, so let's go from one pitcher with some control issues to another, and let's talk a little bit about Sean Newcomb, who is going to start on Saturday, I believe, against the Mets. There you go, Brett.
I know.
So you will become well acquainted with Sean Newcomb. So walking too many people, also missing a ton of bats, pretty much the Sean Newcomb story in AAA. But the ERA is below 3, pretty promising this year. So What do you make of Newcomb long term? Because I know he was a guy I was fairly down on coming into the season.
Yeah, Newcomb, it's sort of the opposite of Martes in that I'm not a huge Newcomb fan long term, but I think he's going to have more fantasy value in 2017 than Martes. I think Newcomb's got a much better chance of sticking in the rotation for a little bit. I mean, Bartolo Colon, as much as I love him, just looks completely cooked at this point.
He certainly does.
Yeah. He's held that walk rate to about where it was in throughout the rest of his minor league career, and he's still walking about 5 batters per 9, which is not good. But he's striking out a lot of batters also. He's essentially going to, if you want to visualize what the good version of Newcomb is, you probably should visualize what the not so great version of Tyler Glasnow is. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, going another way, he doesn't even quite have the raw talent of this player, but I'm wondering if Newcomb's career is going to end up looking sort of like Matt Moore's career. Able to miss bats, gets hit a little bit more than he should given the quality of his stuff, and just walks too many people. And that's a little bit of a lazy default to another high-profile, lefty. But, I wonder if he's going to be a back-end fantasy option that we're always frustrated when we watch because based on pure stuff, he should be more.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And yeah, it's not the raw stuff is not that good, but it is good.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he was drafted in the first round, despite really not being all that great of a college pitcher.
They could also easily, one good thing about the Braves rebuild from a fantasy owner's perspective is they're letting some of these guys figure it out in the rotation. And like, for example, we're seeing it work with Fulte. He's having a pretty good year, and everyone thought he was destined for the bullpen. So hopefully Newcomb will get a little bit of a longer leash in Atlanta than he would elsewhere. But, if you told me in 18 months that Newcomb is a pretty good reliever, I wouldn't be surprised in the least.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, they're totally different pitchers, and I'm not comparing them on skill, but you look at what has happened with Matt Wessler, sort of on the other hand, and the Braves have a ton of arms coming. They have their rotation in AA is probably the best rotation on any minor league team this year. And, they are seemingly not afraid to push their prospects at all. So while, yes, I think that does help Newcomb in the short term, and that I do think he will get some run. He might not have a very extended period of time to prove himself because, by the time second half of 2018 comes around, I mean, they might have 3-4 guys ready knocking on the door to join the major league rotation. Of course, injuries, pitchers, et cetera, but, it's a good problem to have right now for the Braves.
All right, so Brett, two more really much, much quicker notes on guys who were not particularly close to the top 101, but, if you play in a TDGX size league, odds are you've heard of these guys and perhaps they've already been rostered. So Jacob Furillo was called up for one start by the Rays, having a hell of a season in AAA right now. Let's assume Furillo is going to get significant major league playing time next season. What do you see him as from a fantasy perspective?
I see him as a very back end option in deeper mixed leagues, in like 15, 16 team leagues. I see him as being ownable as long as he's in the rotation because, because the park is not a bad place to pitch. And because he does have decent stuff, but he has nowhere near the stuff you would expect based on looking at his minor league numbers. And a lot of that is. A lot of that is sort of the change-up syndrome. So, he's able to take advantage of minor league hitters in a way that he won't be able to take advantage of major league hitters. So don't let the really shiny strikeout numbers fool you. I don't think he's that type of pitcher at the major league level.
All right, and then sort of on a similar vein, but the other side for a hitter, Franchi Cordero, who just refuses to die in terms of prospect value. Has pretty much no idea what he's doing at the plate, but the man can make contact. He was hitting .289 in AAA despite striking out a third of the time. In a very limited sample, he's hitting .333 in the majors despite striking out 40% of the time. Brett, what are the odds that Franchi Cordero is anything other than a fourth outfielder long term?
I think the odds are about 20%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not confident.
And
it's awesome to see him in the majors, though.
It is, and I feel a little bit dirty that we're talking about Franchi without Craig. Do you see any sort of fancy tool other than average? I personally don't. I mean, he can run a little bit, but if he does play, I think he's going to be a pretty average-driven guy anyway.
Yeah, I think he's got the potential to contribute a little bit in steals, but I mean, we're talking about probably a 15 steal guy at peak. So no, I mean, the batting average is where he'd have to return, a good amount of that value, and it's going to be a tough proposition with him unless he can cut down that strikeout rate.
Right. So if it all really clicks, you hope he hits, 280 with 10 homers and 15 steals, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
That would be prime Franchi Cordero.
That qualifies as prime Franchi.
Okay. All right. So in less exciting news, we were talking about three guys who are extremely not prospects, but who have performed so well this season that they're probably worth mentioning. So let's start with Zach Cozart, who's hitting .351, .436, .623. And yes, he is a huge BABIP, but he's also walking a lot more. He's not striking out at a crazy rate. What is this, Brett? I mean, Cozart is going to turn 32 later this season. Is this just a 10-week blip on the radar?
I think it is. I mean, I was talking a little bit about Cozart with Mike on one of the more recent episodes of Flags Fly Forever. But Cozart is ostensibly the same hitter that he's been. He's healthy and he's walking a little bit more, but he's not really doing anything all that different. The batted ball profile is similar. The power, I think we've always thought, has been there. He just hasn't really tapped into it consistently. So while coming into the season, you could kind of squint and see him as a .260 hitter with 20 home runs. I think he's established the power as being more legitimate when he's healthy, but I don't see the batting average sustaining anything like this. I think underlying he still is really kind of a .260, .270 hitter, and that's just going to fall pretty hard over the next 4 months.
All right, and now, Brett, it's time for America's favorite game show, Pick Your Favorite 30-Year-Old First Baseman. Moving forward, do you prefer Yonder Alonso or Justin Smoke?
Give me Justin Smoke, and I'll tell you why. I love Justin Smoke's approach at the plate this year. He's been a career, 25 or so percent strikeout guy. He's at less than 18% this year, and he's keeping the same walk rate. The power obviously is an enormous spike, and some of that is due to a little bit of luck, but he's got a 26% home run to fly ball rate, which is higher than I think you would expect it to be, but it's not that much higher than you see from power hitters. The key is his fly ball rate. His fly ball rate's jumped up 10 percentage points. You get that with Alonso also in Oakland, but I think Smoke's development is a little bit more viable. And it also doesn't hurt that he's playing in the better ballpark of the two. So, he's the guy I prefer.
Yeah, I'm not crazy high neither, but I just, I just sold high on Yonder Alonso and TDGX and was pretty motivated to do so. So I see that bubble popping pretty soon.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so I think the last guy we wanted to talk about before we get to our main event is Enya, would you also take Justin Smoke over Enya, or would you sort of default with someone who you know is capable of producing some hits?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've already seen more consistency from Justin Smoke this year, right?
Welcome back to episode 89 of Tino. Pretty excited about this next segment because Brett and I are now joined by Mr. Jim Callis, who is the senior writer for MLB.com. So, Jim, welcome to Tino, and thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, yeah, glad to be here. I love talking draft. I'll probably be talking draft a lot between now and when it ends on Wednesday, but always good having some good draft talk.
Yeah, so as I assume our listeners can guess, we are going to talk about the upcoming draft. Obviously, it starts on Monday, and there are a lot of interesting things about this draft class to parse. So why don't we jump right into it in and talk about a couple of names at the top, which are a little different this year because we've got two of the top talents in the draft that are considered in some form or another to be two-way players, much more so than we generally see in the past. So, Jim, do you think we might realistically see either Hunter Green or Brendan McKay play as a two-way player in the majors, or is it just too much fun to imagine?
I think it's more likely going to be imagined than real. I mean, Hunter Green... No, he won't be a two-way guy just because to be a pitcher and a shortstop or a third baseman at the same time is too much strain on your arm, and you couldn't do that. And it's interesting. He'd probably go in the 15 to 25 range as a position player with power, you know, big power potential, arm strength, likely, you know, project him as a third baseman. But he's clearly better as a pitcher. He'll get drafted as a pitcher. He's probably going to go number two of the Reds. And you just can't tax a guy's arm like that. You know, Brendan McKay of Louisville, it's interesting. Like I really feel like he and Dave Winfield, 1973, are the only two players in draft history who would have been consensus top five picks as a hitter or a pitcher. And it's funny, you know, McKay, if he goes 1, 2, or 3 to the Twins, Reds, or Padres, he'll be a pitcher. And if he goes 4 or 5 to the Rays or Braves, he'll be a hitter. So there's no consensus in the top five. I think it's a pretty even split. If you got all 30 teams to tell you, I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me all if it was 15-15. You know, so it's super interesting from that standpoint. Now, him, you know, there's a better possibility because I don't think he'd be an everyday pitcher and first baseman, but if he's drafted by an American League, like the Twins prefer him as a pitcher. If the Twins took him, you know, maybe you'd use him as a pitcher / DH, or at least as a pitcher, and, you know, you could bring him off the bench to pinch hit and maybe get a few at-bats here and there. I do think this summer there's a pretty good chance he may do both because even if you like him better as a pitcher, he'll throw about 110 innings, you know, maybe even a few more, 120 if Louisville goes to College World Series. So when he signs, even if you like him as a pitcher, he's going to pitch 10 or 15 innings, and it's going to be, you know, 5 or 6 starts where he goes 2 or 3 innings apiece. And if he's doing that, then why not let him hit? So I think there's a good chance that whoever drafts him will probably let him do both to maybe, you know, give him a little bit more information to think about. You know, whether the whole thing about whether you do it at the big league level, it's still probably a stretch just because you get into, would you rather have a guy who's, you know, average or maybe solid in two areas, or a guy who's a potential star in one? I think if you want a two-way guy, we probably have to wait for Shohei Ohtani to come over from Japan, because I think he's going to dictate that he gets a chance to play both ways. But, probably not going to see a guy do both of them regularly in the big leagues.
Yeah, Ohtani is going to be a very interesting example of what happens when a player gets to control his own destiny, which is a whole subject for another day. But going from McKay sort of as a hitter to talking about some of these other college bats, it seems like the top of the draft class in terms of hitters is a little more loaded this year with cornerbacks. Are there, do you see any of these hitters, and McKay included as a hitter, as really being, you know, middle of the order potential star hitters?
Yeah, I mean, I like McKay better as a hitter. I think you could, if you like him as a hitter, you could see this guy being a 300, you know, hitter, 20 home runs a year. So I think he could, you know, he controls the strike zone very well too. So he'd be one. If you like Pavin Smith, yeah, I think you see Pavin Smith the same way, you know, potentially as a number three hitter. Never almost, I think he only struck out about 10 times this year. You know, it could be, you know, both those guys are probably bat over power, but, you know, chance to be good power hitters. But you're right. I mean, there aren't a lot of those types of guys. I like Jaron Kendall a lot. He's a sure center fielder. He does have swing and miss issues. So I'm not sure, depending on who takes him, where you project him being in the order. I think he's the type of guy who may not hit for a super high average, but he is going to draw some walks. He is going to hit for some power. He is going to, you know, steal a lot of bases. So I still like him. You know, Adam Haseley, you know, whoever drafts him probably sees Adam Haseley as a potential middle of the order hitter. You know, I think there's some split opinion on him, the Virginia center fielder. You know, I think everybody believes he'll hit. The question is, if you like him, you think he's a center fielder who maybe hits 15 homers a year, and if you're not as high on him, you maybe question the center field and you think it might be 10 or 12 homers a year. So it's the college position players are always in short supply because the teams do such a great job of signing high school athletes before they even get to college. But this year, the college position players seem a little bit thinner than usual, especially if you're looking for somebody who can legitimately play up the middle.
Yeah. So let's go back up towards the top of the draft and go on to the mound. Kyle Wright at Vanderbilt, you know, there's a lot of talk of him potentially going number one. It seems pretty certain at this point that he's going to be one of the top picks in the draft. Is it fair to say that that he comes with more risk than you would generally see from a top of the draft college arm?
No, I don't. What have you heard that would make you think there's more risk with him than in a typical college right-hander?
Well, it seems like there's a lot more command control projection.
I think what happened with him, his mechanics were out of sync at the beginning of the year, and he got off to a pretty bad start. I mean, his stuff was still good. He just wasn't locating it. But if you broke down his year, the first six or seven starts, his ERA was over 5, and since then, he's been lights out for 2 months. So I don't think so. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's got kind of the build's right there in the sweet spot. He's not short, but he's not too tall. It's like 6'4", 220. It's strong. He's 92, 96 most of the time. You know, curveball's good. Slider's good. Changeup's good. You know, I don't think he's going to be, you know, pinpoint control, but he's not. I don't have any worries about him throwing strikes. I mean, I actually think he probably gives you, you know, McKay's more polished as a pitcher without the same stuff. But I think Wright, if you're taking him number one, and I can certainly see why somebody would want to, you know, to me, he gives you the best combination of ceiling and floor. This is a frontline starter and a pretty good bet to get there. I think he gives you that. If anybody in the draft, he probably gives you the best combination of ceiling and floor.
Sounds good. Now, behind him, there's been, you know, for people who have followed this draft class for the last 12 months, there's been, and not that it's unusual, there's been a lot of movement between pitchers, you know, pitchers who were considered to be top arms in the class, you know, a year ago, and now sort of hovering, some still projected to go in the first round, some not even projected to go in the first round. Who are some of your favorite college arms behind Wright?
Yeah, that's a good question, too, because it's like coming into the year, I thought college pitching was going to be the strength of the draft, and I thought we maybe could see 6 or 7 college pitchers taken in the first, you know, 12 or 13 picks, and that's not going to happen now. And most of the college pitchers have backed up. I mean, I guess if I was taking, I mean, Kyle Wright to me would clearly be the best college pitcher. I would probably take, who would I take two? I would probably take McKay two. I know the teams that like him see him as a number two starter. I probably see him more as a number three, but he's got the highest floor in the draft. So they'd be the top two for me. After that, I still like J.B. Bukauskas. I think he hasn't pitched well the last couple times out, and especially in the regional against Davidson, and it may knock him out of the top 10. You know, he's not a big guy, and there's effort in the delivery, and he's probably never going to have better than average control, but he might have the best pure stuff, you know, in the draft, for the best 1-2 combo with his fastball and slider. So I'd probably put him third. You know, it's like there's a bunch of names, but like I don't know if anybody's really jumped out. You know, Alex Fieto, his velocity's backed up this year, still has a good slider, throws an awful lot. Griffith Canning, UCLA, is pretty polished, but it's not, you know, it's good stuff, but it's not wow stuff. You know, David Peterson, the Oregon lefty who's made a move into the middle of the first round. You know, it's more like a combination of pitches and really a true out pitch. He throws a lot of strikes. You know, Tanner Houck from Missouri, you know, pretty good track record. You know, low arm slot worries some people. Alex Lang, LSU, I still think people hold it against him a little bit that his best year was his freshman year. He's still been pretty good the last 2 years. But his freshman year, if he'd built off his freshman year and gotten a little bit better each of the next 2 years, we'd probably be talking about Alex Lang as number one pick in the draft. But he hasn't. You know, that was his best year. Some people see him as a reliever, probably the best curveball in college baseball. You know, and then you have, like, the super wild card of Seth Romero, you know, of Houston, who was an easy top 10 pick. I mean, Seth Romero might be going like number six in this draft, except, I mean, he'd had some issues that bothered people coming into the year, and then he got suspended for about a month, and he came back, and he pitched a little bit, and then he got kicked off the team for getting in a fight with a teammate. And I don't think teams are really liking the answers they get when they've talked to Seth. So I don't even know if that guy's going in the first round. You know, to me, I'll tell you who I like is kind of a, I mean, he's not really a sleeper because he can go pretty good. But Corbin Martin from Texas A&M has always kind of had his role kind of, you know, going to start. Then they put him in the bullpen and move him around. And, you know, I think if you take that guy, if you take Corbin Martin and you tell him he's a starter and it's not going to change, and you just send him out there every fifth day, I think he's got a chance to be, you know, a pretty good guy. He was up to 98 in the Cape last year as a reliever. He's 91-95 as a starter this spring when the Aggies have started him at A&M. He's got a really good curveball, the slider, a solid pitch. He'll flash a change. He's athletic. You know, control's been a little iffy, but again, I think if you just gave him innings and told him this is your role, it's not going to change, I think you could get the average control. So, like, Corbin Martin will probably go behind all those guys I mentioned, you know, with Seth Romero, maybe not because he's a wild card. And Corbin Martin might wind up being better than half of them. He's kind of my sleeper of those pitchers. I don't think he's going to go in the first round, but he might wind up being one of the better pitchers when all is said and done.
So obviously this is a fantasy podcast. So, you know, for dynasty league players that are going to be drafting these players, you know, once they sign and get into pro ball, you know, generally the sweet spot of these drafts at the top tend to be college arms, college bats. And, you know, as we've talked through, there are a couple of names that are going to show up at the top of these lists, but it does kind of peter out relatively quickly, at least comparatively. So, you know, where I think a lot of big decisions are going to have to be made more than usual, I think, is with the prep class. And you get two different, you know, to me, it seems like there are two separate sort of really fun areas of this prep class. There's the pitching side, and then there's sort of the never-ending parade of kind of fun prep outfielders who could be really good. So why don't we start on the hitting side, and at least talk about Royce Lewis first. Is he the guy for you with the most upside in terms of the prep hitters?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And I'd agree with you that, too, in terms of fans' perspective. I'd always rather have the college guys just because they're going to give you a payoff, you know, more quickly. I mean, I'm not saying I would take every college guy over every high school guy, but in general, I would err on the guy who's going to potentially help my fantasy team quicker. But, yeah, Royce is to me, clearly the highest ceiling among position players. I mean, if you consider Brendan McKay pitcher, then I think Royce Lewis is clearly the best position player in the draft. He's got the best combination of athleticism and hitability. He's a well above average runner. Yeah, I don't think there's any question he's going to be able to hit. You know, power, he might be a 12 or 15 home run guy. I do think he winds up in center field rather than shortstop. I think most people feel that way. But yeah, I think that if I'm looking at prep position players, I'm easily taking Royce Lewis number one.
All right. So behind Lewis, there's sort of a gap here. I mean, you have Austin Beck, who depending on I wouldn't say he's a consensus number two prep hitter, but he's for the most part considered sort of that guy. And then beyond him, you get just a ton of these other sort of interesting outfielders. You've got Adele, you've got Bubba Thompson, you've got Helio Ramos. Who are some of the prep outfielders who might not go in the top half of the first round, but you think could really develop long term into really solid hitters?
Yeah, it's interesting because even with Beck and Joe Adele, they could go in the top 10 or they could go in the 20s, but we'll cross them off as guys who are going to go pretty good. And you're right, there are a lot of outfielders. Bubba Thompson is a very good athlete, a former football player who's committed to baseball now. And like a lot of football guys, he shows some aptitude. It's not just raw tools, there's some skills there. He's going to hit. The power's better than people expected. He's a well above average runner. He's a real interesting guy. He might be a better bet to hit than Adele or Beck, or at least I think people, Beck's so hard because he was injured last year, tore up his knee in the North Carolina playoffs as a junior, and just nobody saw him on the showcase circuit because he wasn't there. So you haven't seen him with wood bats against good competition. I think that there's some really interesting fantasy guys. Tristan Lutz has got some of the best power in this draft. He's a Texas high school product, at least an average runner. Well, probably an average runner. I should say at least an average. He's an average runner, but I think he can hit too. He's not just a masher. Quentin Holmes from New York is probably the fastest runner in this draft. He's a potential source for steals. You mentioned Helio Ramos, who's got interesting power. Drew Waters is a pretty interesting hitter with some plus speed out of Georgia. Connor Usselton out of Oklahoma is a guy who has a chance to have solid tools across the board. He's hit. I think he's people feel a little bit better about him because he's hit better than expected. And I mean, you just go on and on. There's Garrett Mitchell has a chance to have average or better tools across the board. There's a couple kids from Louisiana, Daniel Cabrera and Jacob Pearson, who are both kind of bat over power. Pearson's a better runner. Both interesting guys. There are a lot of really good prep outfielders.
Yeah. So now on the other side of the coin, we talked about Hunter Green already, who's right at the top of he's number one on your list at MLB Pipeline. The only other prep pitcher in the top 10 is Mackenzie Gore. So how interesting is Gore in sort of how we think about prep pitchers recently? Is he how does he compare, I guess, with Jason Grom from last year's class? Is it does he just look good comparatively to the other prep arms, or is he a real potential frontline guy?
Now I'm going to go on my Mackenzie Gore rant that I wind up doing on every draft podcast radio show I do. I love Mackenzie Gore, and I'm not claiming I'm the smartest guy in the world or I'm a reporter. I'm not a scout, but I talk to a lot of people. I would take Mackenzie Gore 1-1 in a baseball draft. If it were me, I could have any player in this draft. I would take Mackenzie Gore. Now I'll qualify that by saying I don't have to pay him millions of dollars. I'm not going to lose my job if I blow a series of first round picks. And I could see if you wanted more certainty, and still pretty good ceiling, taking Kyle Wright over him. But for me, I take Mackenzie Gore. I mean, he's left-handed. He's super athletic. He's 92-96 more often than not. It's a plus curveball. He'll flash you a plus slider and plus changeup. I think he's going to have plus control. He's got a high leg kick. It's kind of fun to watch. If you go to our website, MLBpipeline.com, look at the video. But unlike a lot of young guys with a big leg kick, I mean, he sticks the landing every time. I mean, he's good. He repeats the delivery. He's on line to the plate. He throws a lot of strikes. He's a pretty good two-way player, too. I mean, I'm not – Hunter Green's more famous. And Hunter Green throws harder. I mean, Hunter Green can hit 102, and Hunter Green has probably maybe the quickest arm anybody's ever seen in a high school right-hander. It's amazing. And Hunter Green's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he's a two-way player and super athletic. And Mackenzie Gore's a two-way player and very athletic as well. And for me, the difference between him and Hunter Green is, okay, Green throws harder, but in a way that also is slightly worrisome to me, because I just don't know guys who throw in the upper 90s regularly, any of them, who seem to stay healthy for a long period of time, or very few. But, you know, you'll give Hunter Green the fastball, but Mackenzie Gore's left-handed. Mackenzie Gore's not throwing 88. He's throwing 92, 96. Mackenzie Gore has a much better curveball. I don't think Hunter Green's going to be able to throw a curve. I think it's going to wind up being a slider because he just doesn't have great field of spin. But you know, I think Hunter Green's slider will be harder than Mackenzie Gore's, but Mackenzie Gore's slider will be tighter and have more bite. He's got a better changeup. I'm taking Mackenzie Gore over Hunter Green. I'm taking Mackenzie Gore over Brendan McKay. And like I said, I'd take him over Kyle Wright. I don't claim to have all the answers. And I could certainly, if I were running a team, if somebody wants to say, look, you know, Kyle Wright's got a pretty high ceiling too, and there's less risk, I could see that. But that'd be the only player I'd even really consider taking over Mackenzie Gore.
That's great. Further down the list, I think, you know, you get sort of your combination of pitchers who are sort of your regular late-ish risers, whether it's because there's questions whether they're going to sign, or guys who are just kind of peaking from a velocity standpoint. Behind Green and Gore, who are the next, you know, maybe one or two prep arms that you really like heading into the draft?
I think the clear next one would be Shane Baz from Texas. He might have the deepest repertoire in the draft. He's got a 92-96 mile an hour fastball, hits 98. His cutter is one of the more unhittable pitches in the draft. And his fastball's got run and sink on it, too. It's not just hard. It's got pretty good life for a pitch thrown out hard. In addition to that cutter, I mean, he could throw a legitimate slider. It's not like a pitch that blends, or, you know, he has a legitimate separate slider that can also be plus. He's got a curveball that's distinct from the slider that can – it's probably more solid than plus. He has a changeup. You know, I think he's going to go pretty good. I think he's going to go somewhere in the he can maybe sneak as high as 3, but I think he probably goes 12 or so, somewhere around that range. And then the other two names I throw out there would be D.L. Hall, lefty from Georgia, good fastball, curveball, kind of a smaller guy, so get some Scott Kazmir comparisons. And then Sam Carlson from Minnesota is a guy everybody already liked. They thought he had some of the best right-handed pitchability to go with solid stuff in this draft. And then he's a big, strong kid, 6'4". He keeps getting stronger, and his stuff has kicked up a notch. And now he's throwing 93, 97 with a harder slider. And, you know, what's interesting, we're talking about two-way guys. Those both he's definitely a pitcher, and Baz is definitely a pitcher. But Baz, you know, it has big-time power, would be a very good third-base prospect. If he went to TCU, which he probably won't because he'll go too high in the draft, he'd be a two-way guy. And similarly, Carlson's a right fielder with bat speed, power, potential arm strength. I mean, if he went to Florida, and again, I don't think he'll get there, you could entertain playing him two ways. And like I said, I mean, we know about Green. You know, Gore, there's no way Gore's going to wind up East Carolina. But if he did, you could play. I think he'd be a very good two-way player too. There's a lot of talented two-way guys in this draft. You know, Haseley, who we touched on earlier too. You know, Haseley, you know, pitches for Virginia as well as plays center field.
Interesting. So let's do a couple of as we wind down, do a couple of quick hits on some players who I think are interesting from, you know, from more of a fantasy standpoint than they are from sort of a pure MLB talent standpoint.
Sure.
The one guy who I find super interesting from fantasy, you know, partially he's got all kinds of issues on outside of the batter's box, but Keston Hiura, and I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but
you did that right. Keston Hiura, you got it
right. Okay. So how good of a hitter can he actually be?
There are some people who believe he's the best hitter in this draft, best pure hitter in the draft. You can't read too much. I mean, you could call it stats that are, you know, you can read into him what you want, but he's leading NCAA Division I in hitting. He's leading NCAA Division I in on-base percentage. He led Team USA in slugging last year. I mean, I think you're looking at he could be a potential 300 hitter. I think it's probably, you know, 15 home run power. He hurt his elbow last year, has not played the field since. You'd really like to be able to play him at second, and you just don't know because you haven't been able to try to play him there. You know, if he's not a second baseman, he's probably left fielder. But that's pretty good. He's a tough guy to figure out where exactly he's going in the first round, just because of the questions about the elbow. I think he goes 15 to 25 and maybe towards the low end of that range. He'd be a guy I'd really want in a fantasy draft because you could potentially get him as a second baseman. You know, if you could stash some minor leaguers, okay, or prospects, you know, him having Tommy John surgery, which he's probably going to have, you know, isn't a huge setback. And I really do think he'll hit. I mean, you know, like I said, you might get a 315 home run second baseman, and I'd be all in on that.
Yeah. You mentioned him really briefly before, but obviously speed is a big deal for fantasy owners. Quentin Holmes, you mentioned him as possibly being the fastest guy in this class. Is he the kind of player who can make that speed work at the major league level? And are there any other players in this class that have sort of, you know, either top of the line or close to top of the line speed that, you know, could realistically use it in a starting role in the majors?
Yeah, I mean, Holmes is the most interesting, although, you know, as a New York high school product, I mean, the bat has a further way to go. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting him. He'd probably be like a later round pick for me, depending on how deep you're drafting guys out of the draft for a fantasy league at this point. I mean, Jaron Kendall's a guy who people make a lot of his 25% strikeout rate, but I think he's productive even if he swings and misses some. I mean, he has some power. I think Jaron Kendall, you know, maybe hits 250, 260 in the big leagues because he strikes out, but I think it's 15 homers. It's well above average speed. I think it's at least 30 steals, a good center fielder too. Kevin Merrill from South Florida is kind of a sleeper shortstop, probably has to go to second base, but he's, you know, the 20-80 scale, maybe a 75 runner. He can really run. So those would be probably the three main speed guys I would be targeting.
All right. And then on the velocity side, a lot of talk recently about Nate Pearson and his radar gun readings. What's sort of the latest you're hearing on him? Do you think he's someone who could legitimately break into the first round of the draft? And do you think he's got a chance to start?
Yeah, I think he's going in the first round. I think he was even before the bullpen workout a week or so ago when he hit 101, 102. Best junior college arm in the country. Although Brendan Little, another Florida kid, lefty, is pretty good too. You know, starter and relieving, that's kind of up in the air a little bit. You know, I don't know if there's really a second plus pitch. I mean, he throws hard. He's got a hard slider. You know, the control can come and go a little bit. So, I mean, you might wind up getting a reliever. I mean, I like him. You know, so much can go wrong with pitchers that if I was lining up these guys in a fantasy draft, I would probably, after you get past like the six or seven pitchers at the top, be looking to a bunch of position players first. I like Nate Pearson for fantasy purposes. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd want that arm, but I don't know if I'd prioritize him, you know, over some of these other position players that you could possibly get in a draft.
I'm not sure whether you've seen it or not. We have it on the front page of the homepage today. You know, Ben and Craig Goldstein are one of our other hosts who's not here tonight. Do a draft of their favorite names of players in the draft. It's a really interesting year for that. Who of all the players that you have that you've reported on this year? Do you have a player with you think the best name that you've come across?
I think the obvious guy has got to be, and I haven't seen the feature yet, has got to be it's got to be Jeter Downs. Just, you know, named after Derek Jeter. He plays shortstop. I'd have to go, I think, Jeter Downs.
He did. I don't want to spoil it for you. He did go number one in.
Okay,
in
well, good. Draft. Then we're on the same page.
It is a fantastic name.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Kate Cavalli. I just like the way Kate Cavalli rolls off the tongue a little bit. He's a hard throwing right hander from Oklahoma. I like him. I don't know if he went in the draft. I've been looking at these guys so much from a talent standpoint. I haven't borne down on the names, I'll have to admit, but I'm definitely taking Jeter Downs number one if we're drafting off of names. I'm just trying to scroll down our. You know who I like? I kind of like the sound of Bryce Mantisteoka, who's got one of the better arms in strap, a long injury history. He's a right-hander out of Missouri, kind of like him. But for some reason, and this will make me seem foolish, whenever I see Lipscomb outfielder Michael Gigliotti, I for some reason think of Quagmire on Family Guy. So that's one. Oh, I'll tell you who else has got a good name. This guy, I don't know if he got drafted, Dalton Varsho, who's Gary Varsho's son and named after Darren Dalton. It's not quite as good as Jeter Downs, but I like Dalton Varsho. As he'd be on my all-name team.
That's a good one. Just one more question for you before we let you go. I know you got there's no shortage of stuff you have to do over the next week or so, but obviously there's been a ton of focus on the 2017 draft class, and rightly so, but we're also heading into the end of the College World Series. Are there any players who really long viewing dynasty leaguers should keep an eye on for the 2018 draft class? Not just players who they might watch in the College World Series, but anyone particularly interesting you think we'll be talking about towards the top of this list next year?
Yeah, I'll admit I've not spent a lot of time thinking about that. You know, Joe Gray, outfielder from Mississippi, I guess jumps out because I saw him at the Under Armour All-America game last year as a rising junior, big power potential. I think the top high school pitcher next year is probably Kumar Rocker, a kid from Georgia who's got a Vanderbilt commitment, just big body, big arm. Seth Beers, probably the most famous college hitter, although he's first base only. So, I mean, it's all bat, but he's an obvious guy. I'm trying to think. Well, the best pitcher is probably Brady Singer from Florida. I might be missing somebody, but those would probably be the four guys who would jump out to me the most, with the caveat that I've not spent a ton of time working on those guys.
All right. That's all I got. I really, really appreciate you joining us on the podcast here. This was great. I think our listeners are going to be far more prepared now for their not only just to watch the draft, but for their drafts thereafter. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're familiar with Jim's work. You know where to find him, but obviously, all of his draft stuff and all of his other prospect stuff is at MLB.com, MLBpipeline.com. Jim, are you anything else in particular you want to plug, let everybody know you're working on?
Yeah, I'll throw up my Twitter feed too. I try to link all the stuff I do and a lot of the stuff we do at MLB Pipeline, but Twitter feed, Jim Callis, MLB, all one word, J-I-M-C-A-L-L-I-S, MLB. And I try to interact with fans as much as I can, although if I don't interact quite as much between now and next Wednesday, I think people can figure out why. But I enjoy Twitter. I always felt like, you know, doing what I do, or anybody who's kind of in the prospect media where you're ranking players and saying this guy's better than that guy, I think it's good to be accountable and have people ask you, okay, well, why? Or why do you have this guy ahead of that guy? Or what don't you like about that guy? And so I try to interact with fans as much as time permits and defend my rationale or explain my rationale whenever I can.
Sounds great. So, Jim, thank you very much. As always, one of the best in the business for good reason. So, best of luck with all of the draft coverage, and we'll now consider you an official friend of the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's always easy to get me to talk draft, so always good talking about it. And thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Okay. Take care. Bye bye.
Welcome back to episode 89 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping.
Once again, please follow Jim Callis on Twitter at JimCallisMLB, and be sure to read all of his draft coverage and prospect coverage at MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com. Odds are, if you listen to Tino, you already know where to find him, but we appreciate his time, and everything he writes is worth reading again. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Brett Sayer VP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in currently drinking Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening. Sorry we didn't make Jim Callis say Enya. And have a good night.
Saying, yeah.